You are totally awesome.
Welcome to You're Totally Awesome, a podcast devoted to catching up with some of the amazing people around us and finding out what they've been up to lately. My name is Aaron, and today we're joined by horse enthusiast and aspiring veterinarian, Karen Rosenbaum. Kara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad you think I'm totally awesome.
You are. Karen and I went to college together, and every time I saw her, she was pretty much the best. Let me throw that intro out there. So I described you as a horse enthusiast and an aspiring veterinarian. But what exactly? I remember you were on the equestrian team at Brown. But what have you been doing with horses over the summer and since Brown ended?
So horse enthusiast would probably be the understatement of the century. I think I first met a horse when I was 5 years old, and one broke free from a local farm into my backyard, and I was halfway out the door, and someone grabbed me and was like, "You can't touch it." and since then, there's been no looking back.
Good.
So I spent my summer competing on my horse, which was a lot of fun because I got him when he was only 4 years old, and he couldn't really move in a straight line, and he was afraid of pretty much anything in the world. And this summer he moved up to a higher level and went to a bunch of competitions, wasn't afraid of anything.
Wow.
Only squealed like a pig at one other horse that he didn't like, because that's his trick. And lots of people told me he was pretty, so that was super fun. And then, you know, I worked on a training of some baby horses. I became a unprofessional horse show groom for a bunch of little kids, basically holding their bags and getting them on their ponies, which was super fun, actually.
Okay.
And then I worked for a small animal vet, which was not horses, and a very different world in a kind of a more Stepford-ish town, shall we say, local to the area. So that was an interesting situation to kind of walk into and see people who want their dogs groomed to match their carpets.
It's an important thing, okay? It's an important thing for domesticated folk, I would say.
You know, and to have a properly color-coded collection of labradoodles is also, it's part of everyone's well-rounded life.
Oh my gosh.
I learned this.
Oh my gosh. Yes, again, another important thing for certain people.
I mean, you cannot make this stuff up.
I bet they could create a. I bet, in fact, they've already created a sitcom on this. Probably a good movie or two on the.
If they haven't, there should be a real dog lives of poor pets subject to these people, because it is beyond anything I've seen. But they care a lot about their pets, so that's really important. They were all very willing to spend whatever they needed to, and so I got to see some cool surgeries and got to do a lot of removals, because lots of Labradors eat anything, basically. Gloves, garden hoses, leashes, anything. So that was interesting. But that vet, actually, I took that job because that veterinarian also does farm animals.
Okay.
So I would basically sit in the office all day and beg him to go on one of the farm calls that, you know, because they kind of pile up, because you have to get your office stuff done first, and you have to travel further for the farm calls, which, as an aspiring equine veterinarian, I'm getting very used to spending time in my car.
Yes.
So we would have to travel to these farms, and so I'd beg and be like, "Look, we have just enough hours to make it there and back," and it worked out in my favor. I got to vaccinate a prize bull with one horn.
Wow.
And I got to that, and I think the other highlight was probably wrestling an alpaca at a summer camp.
What?
So that we could cut off some of its teeth, because they had grown outside of its lip, and we had to he literally cut them with a wire.
Oh my gosh.
And file them down. That was pretty amazing. And a very mean alpaca.
I'm pretty sure you could take down an alpaca. I think you could probably take down a rhino, Kara, knowing you. I think you'd be fine against those guys.
I would like to try my hand. I think I am pretty skilled at taking down four-legged beasts, but it's pretty vicious.
And alpaca is no joke. Alpaca is no joke. Okay, so this is all extremely exciting stuff. And I think, so you initially want to be a vet because of the horse aspect of it, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
When I was when I was 8 years old, my mother, so obviously at this point I couldn't drive, and my parents would kind of leave me at the barn where I rode at as babysitting, essentially. And she forgot that she had dropped me off there for a lesson. So at 6:30 at night, I finally got a hold of a phone because there were no cell phones. And I was like, do you mind if I call my mom?
Oh.
She realized she hadn't come. And that's when I learned to give my first shot to a horse when I was eight years old. And since then, it's no turning back.
So you've known since you were eight that you wanted to be a horse veterinarian and equine veterinarian. Did I have that right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of roadblocks along the way. I actually had a professor at Brown, well, actually he's the on-staff veterinarian, sit me down in his office and hand me five different packets saying why, as a woman, I shouldn't be a vet, as
wow.
a woman wanting to live in a rural area, I shouldn't be a vet,
wow.
How I would make no money and have no life as a vet, and just like all this stuff, you know, people just throw information at you. They say school is so hard, and then you make no money afterwards, you're in debt for years. You have to be a star in the business to succeed. You know, if you want to work with horses, good luck if you want to have kids if you're a woman. So there's definitely been a lot of tears, a lot of people
yeah.
telling me not to do it and to rethink it. But I just, you know, and of course I'm working on my personal statement right now, so this stuff keeps coming up and as I'm telling myself why I'm so totally awesome.
Yep, yes you are.
I learned that at the end of the day, the more I'm around the medical side of working with animals, the more I like thrive off of it. It's like a drug. I just want to learn more and do more and know how to solve all those problems.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to be the person to be like, well, let's call the vet. I can be like, wait a second, I got this.
I can do it myself. I think that's really cool is like knowing the obstacles that are available or you're gonna encounter, and just like saying like whatever because you like it so much, right? I mean, it's something that you've been so passionate about since you were five. You were just saying, right? Like
yeah.
I don't.
I wish I could talk myself out of it still at this point, but with my applications due in 2 days, the only people that are talking me out of it will be the admissions committees.
Right, right. Which I doubt. Knowing you, I doubt that anyone will be saying no anytime soon. So let's rewind a little bit. What is your horse's name?
Oh, my horse is a little bit special. His name is Moonstruck.
Okay.
Because he's all black for the most part, and then he's got white over on all four of his legs, higher in the back, but he's got a perfect half moon in white right above his
wow.
tail that leads into an all white tail. So I walk around and people are like, what is that thing? And I just joke and call him a cow, but, you know.
They're just checking out his butt. That's really what's going on.
Yeah.
Just checking out his butt.
He's got a really nice badonk, you know. It's his best quality.
As we can all see, we can all tell because people are staring at it.
Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing having to clean it because, you know, you need his whites to be very white for horse shows because it's very fancy and whatever.
Yes, yes.
And there's a picture of me from the summer scrubbing the top of his butt, and it looks like I'm giving him a rectal.
Good, good.
So,
You're
it definitely
be doing
leads
those.
To some good jokes.
You're going to be doing
I
those.
I will be doing those yeah. soon.
Yes, so it's
Can't
good
wait
practice.
To put that big glove on.
Can't wait. With the whole horse thing, like when you do a horse show, is it like a race or is it? No, it's not a race. Not a race. What exactly is a horse show and what does it entail?
I wish it was a race, but unfortunately, I'm not 5 foot nothing or under and like 2 pounds.
Yep,
so
that's a jockey.
I can't race.
That's the life
I'm
of a jockey.
I'm way too big for that. So I do pretend to race sometimes.
You couldn't wrestle an alpaca if you were that size. So trade-offs.
Exactly. Really, at the end of the day, it's all about the alpacas.
Right, right.
The horse shows I do are jumping over scary obstacles. They are scary when you get to the Olympic level. The level I'm doing is not very scary, though sometimes my horse would disagree with me, but for the most part, he doesn't. I actually compete him mostly in what they call the hunter. So it's basically a joke. It's who's has the prettiest horse and whose horse moves the prettiest and looks like it's enjoying its job the most.
These are all official criteria that the judges
rate
on?
Official criteria. So at the end of the day, I realize it's a joke, but I also am super competitive when I'm there. I really like it. I love to win. And my horse has gotten good enough now that I started winning this summer, so it's been really fun.
Nice, nice. And are you going to continue doing this while you're in school and stuff? I mean, you did it at Brown. Are you going to keep doing it while you're
We'll see. I have to. I'm definitely going to do it all year.
Okay.
We'll see if I can convince my parents to move a horse up to or out or wherever to school that I go.
Right.
And if not, then hopefully I can find some horse. But that school, I heard, pretty much consumes your life and sucks your soul out.
Okay.
So I might take a break from competing and more just kind of enjoy the recreational competing with myself to see how I can improve. The personal challenges I will face every day instead.
That's fair. There's going to be quite a few tests, I assume, and quite a few of those more academic aspects to life that you'll be reintroducing.
But I will have to have a horse with me somewhere because I got to see the horses at the end of the day. You have to remind yourself why you're doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. You need that carrot in front of you at least a little bit. While you're at Brown, you knew that you wanted – did you come to Brown knowing you wanted to be an equine veterinarian? Yes?
Yes. I came to Brown knowing that I wanted to probably be an equine veterinarian.
Okay.
As I started looking into like the practicalities of veterinary science, and especially that whole being a rural animal vet and the lifestyle, I started leaning towards potentially small animal practicing, and I had seen the vet that I worked for, the small animal vet, balancing getting to do farm animals and small, and that intrigued me for a bit. So at Brown, I took all the prerequisite courses that I needed for vet school, except for physics, which I'm still taking.
Okay.
But I made sure to kind of spread it out amongst my curriculum because I have a passion for working with special needs children. You know, I really liked studying brain development, and I liked animal behavior as well. So I kind of tried to basically talk myself out of it with my course load.
Right.
And see what other avenues there were to explore. And then I just couldn't stop. I couldn't stop doing it. And this summer, for the first time, I've always, been around the veterinarians when they come to work on my horses. And this summer, during my small animal rotation, I got to do a week with a equine vet. And it was the best 5 days of my summer.
Really?
I came home every day, and my parents, I think, wanted to kill me because I wouldn't stop talking about everything we did. I sounded like a 5-year-old probably, and I was like, this is it. I have to do this. I can't not do this.
What kind of stuff
did you do? And then I got a job there, and I've been there ever since.
What kind of stuff did you do during those 5 days that were like, oh man, I got to do this for the rest of my life?
I think some of the cool cases I saw. So one, I got to do an endoscopy on a horse that had a nasal tumor, for its whole life. And
wow.
The vet had just recently been introduced to the client probably a month before I saw it, because the client called and said the horse's nose was bleeding. And it turned out that, this horse had this tumor its whole life and no one had ever done anything about it. But as you can imagine, doing surgery on an animal that large has many risk factors involved, let alone cutting into a horse's head, is an extremely dangerous surgery. So she is a brilliant surgeon. And came up with the idea of shrinking this tumor down to formaldehyde.
Wow.
So I got to go with her when she went to go check on it after she had done the first formaldehyde injection. So it was pretty fun for me because I got to kind of wrestle with this horse a little bit. It was pretty bad and did not want this scope going up its nose.
No, that's understandable.
So I was sitting there getting my shoulder half dislocated, trying to keep its head down.
Yep.
But we finally got the scope in there and just seeing how it had shrunk and then seeing the image she had from what it looked like beforehand was absolutely incredible. It went from this huge, nasty mass to much smaller, more normally colored, and she's going to continue to do the therapy, and the horse's nose stopped bleeding. So that was amazing. And
that's incredible. Yeah.
The other one I saw that really kind of shook me, and I was like, I want to be so brilliant that I can think to have this idea, because right now I would have never thought of this. We saw a client who had a horse. He's on Team Ireland for their Olympic teams when he makes it, but he's part of Team Ireland. And we saw one of his horses that has always been lame, so not completely normal moving up front.
Okay.
So they stopped jumping him for a while in his career because they were worried they were going to injure him and he was going to be useless and they were going to cripple him and kill him. But this vet came out and saw him when he happened to be in the area at a horse show. And she came up with the idea to put basically, the Nike sneakers with the little tiny little shock absorbers that you can see through the sole. She basically made glue-on horseshoes that are plasticized with those shock absorbers in them. So they're not like your typical steel horseshoe you see nailed to the bottom, you know, with the big blacksmith. It's plasticized on there, shock absorbers, like the little orange dots and everything. It was amazing. And the horse, they said, moves better than some other horses that have been moving that well their whole lives.
Is a lot of the equine, I guess just like just veterinarian life anyways, is it a lot of it like being innovative on the spot? There's no like clear-cut way to do things?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, as there is probably in human medicine, you know, you walk into health services, you're like, oh, my throat hurts. They're like, okay, strep test. Like, they're not going to assume right off the bat that you have some random strain of some virus.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So there is definitely a degree of that. And I saw a lot more of that in the small animal medicine. But when it comes to the large animal, there's definitely more variation. The emergency cases, you have to be innovative. You know, how am I going to get, we had a horse, actually one of our horses, not in the practice, but one that lives at the barn I ride at, came out one day and he was in his paddock. We were trying to bring him inside. He couldn't move his front leg. And we were like, had to call the vet. What do we do? Like, we can't move the horse. Maybe he has a broken leg. And, you know, she did all her kind of routine checks to see if anything was broken or fractured or dislocated. And then that kind of innovation, yeah, it has to kick in because this horse can't walk. You don't know what to do with it, but clearly something needs to be done.
Right.
And she found out that it was actually, we used, you know, a bunch of different ropes to get him inside. We x-rayed it to rule out, again, anything being broken or fractured we couldn't feel. And we found out that it was actually nerve damage. He stood for 2 days, you know, tied up, and then he was totally fine and walks completely normally. So there's definitely that degree of, you know, having to think on your feet and just like being able to Rolodex recall your textbooks, which just amazes me. I mean, I can't imagine that I will ever be that smart, but the thought that I can be is like blows my mind and makes me so excited.
Well, they're going to train you hard over there in vet school. They're going to make you memorize a lot of stuff, I'm guessing. So you're going to go, I mean, long-term, are you going to go like travel to farms and fix people's horses? Is that like the life of an equine veterinarian?
Yeah. So I actually, working for the practice that I'm in now, they are kind of like sport horse medicine. So I'm working for the chiropractor on staff.
Okay.
And I've gotten to work on Olympic athletes. I mean, literally, it's like if you were to go and like hang out with LeBron James for the afternoon and be like, let me rub your feet while you just like shoot the shit with your wife. And it's so crazy because for me, it's this behind the scenes, you know, like your celebrities are, they're real people too. Like they're rude and they slobber and some of them are lazy and some of them fart in your face. And like,
very nice.
At
very
the end
nice.
Of the day, they're just horses.
Yeah. That's
but,
so
you know,
cool.
So I've gotten to work with the top of the line athletes and I kind of really love it, and it's really fun to practice medicine that way too because you have no constraints on what therapies you can administer and what treatments you can do.
Yeah.
So as a vet, because, you know, it's not a person, someone isn't going to say, oh, Aaron, like, you're a little sore. I don't know if we're going to deal with that. We don't really have the money. But if it's their horse, they'll be like, I don't really have the money. We'll, like, see how he does.
Right.
So when you're working with these top athletes, you're able to do whatever you want. And that really like allows you to explore again, like all these new techniques and like think out new processes and
put in Nike
so
shocks
that,
on feet of horses. How you do that? Exactly.
That is the goal. Actually, the goal is really there's an 82-year-old man named Doc John Steele, who went to Cornell. And he started working on standard bred racing horses and moved into the world of sport horses and has been the Olympic vet for tons and tons of people. And I think he's been the Olympic vet for the U.S. team a bunch of times. And I mean, this man is literally 82 years old. He has someone drive him around now. He's still practicing. He gets out of his car. He watches a horse walk. And he just says, you're going to do this, 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 and this to it. And the horse is better. And you're just like, your jaw drops. I mean, the head of my practice, who is brilliant and people treat him like that, sees Doc Steele and is like, yes, Master Yoda, what can I do for you?
Okay,
so really, I'm aspiring to be an 82-year-old man.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay.
That's the takeaway there for our listeners. Kara wants to be an 82-year-old old man that's pretty much Yoda in E4.
And driven around in a car and just says things.
That's the other thing. There we go. That's a great goal, I think. I think that's that's an incredible goal.
I'll probably eat some bonbons too.
Nice. That's also in there. Well, cool. Kara, it's incredible to hear what you're doing. And I think the most incredible part is hearing that, like, no matter what you've heard, like, about how difficult it is and whatnot, it's like, you can see it in your eyes. You, like, so love this stuff, and you so love your horses, and you're going to go do it. You're going to become an 82-year-old man that knows exactly what's wrong with the horse when they walk around, and I'm excited to see you, I mean, maybe at the Olympics and, like, taking your horses and your athletes out there.
Check me out at the Olympics. That will be sweet.
Listen, as long as you can get me to hang out with LeBron or something while you're there, I'm okay. Like,
hey, I'll trade you LeBron for the Olympics. Don't you worry.
Fair. All right. Well, cool. Thanks for joining us today, Karen. Thanks for talking. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll catch up with you later, all right?